Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, come on. The field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rose intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow. Glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing everything related to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. And remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. So rookie mini camp is over. We will recap everything that came out of rookie minicamp. The coaches spoke, the defensive and offensive coordinators addressed the media, as well as all of the draft picks. So we'll certainly get into that over the next hour. We'll get to your phone calls, we'll get to your tweets. And Paul, it was an eventful few days in terms of rookie minicamp. Steve Spagnuolo probably jumped out to me the most in terms of some of his comments on the rookies, and that's where I want to start. When he was asked about this class, and there's only so much you could take away because there's not a lot of on-field work, but Darian Thompson, the third-round pick for the Giants, first word that he used to describe him, loud, made his presence felt, and that's what you want to see out of a safety. That was very interesting in terms of his observation.
Well, as everybody knows, the middle linebacker and the safety, those two positions, well, they're basically the quarterbacks of your defense. And so that's what Spagnuolo was stressing. And, of course, Darian Thompson himself stressed that. He said, hey, I need to be the quarterback of the defense. I have to yell out stuff like that because I'm supposed to know what everybody is doing. He took that responsibility on his shoulders from the first second he walked on campus. And that's pretty cool because it shows that he's eager, he's willing, he's aggressive. This guy's very studious and serious about the game. He doesn't want to come in here thinking that he's going to be a rookie and a deer in headlights and he's going to have to, you know, kind of adapt to this situation. No, no. He's coming in with a determination that says, I belong here. You know, I have to respect myself and I'm going to make people respect me because I'm taking this thing very seriously from day one. And I expect myself to be one of these guys. So they can do it too. Great attitude.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I wrote something on my Twitter the other day, and I don't know if you saw it, Lance. Folks, I'm at Giants WFAN. He's at Lance Medow, M-E-D-O-W.
There See? You go. Look at How that. Wow, that? You've been studying up, Paul.
I've been studying
there
up.
There we go. A-plus for that.
But I wrote something the other day, and I wanted to just repeat it now, as long as you're bringing this up.
Yeah.
I want to use the exact words again. I put words that come to mind after meeting Giants draft picks today. Calm, cool, focused, prepared. If you have another one,
I think that summarizes it. I thought that they were on point in terms of how they handled the media, too. I mean, this
no
is a
question.
Group of mature athletes.
That's part of being prepared.
Correct. I mean, they didn't miss a beat. They were not flustered with any of the questions. They got right to the point. And that, I think, says a lot about this class. And, Paul, that really shouldn't surprise anybody because when we were reviewing the draft, one of the things that jumped out to us is a number of these guys graduated. They were in school for many years. It wasn't as if, you know, they went
right
in and out. So they've understood what it means to be a part of a program, what it means to interact with the media and so forth. And I think that was on full display on Friday.
Tremendous amount of confidence displayed by all of these guys when they got to the podium. And let me make it something clear to you folks. This was not like coming off the practice field. This was not like milling around in the locker room after a workout session. They had these guys after they did what they had to do. They went, they got something to eat, and then individually, each guy was brought to the podium inside the field house where they're standing there with a bunch of microphones, cameras all around, and I have to say that I've seen many rookies get very intimidated, get very clammy, get very shaky under those conditions. That can be a very pressure-packed situation. You're facing the New York media for the first time in a very uncomfortable antiseptic setting. It's not part of your football environment to be thrown in front of a podium, you know, after having lunch. It's a little different if you're coming off in practice or if you're in the locker room. This is a very antiseptic situation. And I was so impressed with these guys' answers, with their demeanor, with their body language. And I look, again, I felt that way about last year's class, too. And I think what we have found is those guys turned out to be really good guys, too. Owe Adigizua, we have no idea what he brings to the table because he was hurt for most of last season. But he's one of those guys also who has a tremendous amount of respect and regard for what he means to this team. They're counting on him.
In terms of other things to come out of what the rookie class said, you look at Paul Perkins, the running back, the fifth rounder out of UCLA. He says he views himself as an every down back. Eli Apple was asked about the transition, Paul, from moving perhaps from the outside to the slot, and did admit that, you know, he doesn't have a great deal of experience playing in the slot, but he hasn't spoken to the coaching staff in specifics yet that he's definitely going into the slot, but he's very open to playing both on the outside and the inside.
He said so he hadn't learned at all.
Correct. Yeah. In terms of at least the classroom work, but they haven't had much work on the field right now, so in terms of where they're lining up. But with that being said, and I know you watched a great deal of practice, Paul, it seemed as if Shepard and Apple went at it with one another a little bit, so we got an early taste of what practice may look like.
They did, and I thought Shepard may have had a slight edge based on that first practice that I saw. Now, remember, we were not allowed as media to see Saturday's practice. The second day of the full practice sessions were closed to the media, so we have no idea exactly what happened on Saturday. But based on what I saw Friday, I thought Shepard had a little bit of the better of him. I will tell you this, though. The one play where Shepard tipped the ball, it wasn't a great pass,
and then Apple got the interception.
Apple came up with the pick, that answered some of the questions about ball skills. Because some people have said, you know, why did Eli Apple have so few interceptions? And Spags was one who said, there's hidden value there because he does prevent guys from throwing at him.
With press coverage.
But then there are other people who said he doesn't play the ball well. The critics of Eli Apple point to him being raw and say that he doesn't play the ball well.
And penalties, too, piling up was another one.
Well, he played the ball well on that play. That did not look like a guy who doesn't know how to play the football. He did exactly what he had to do. And so that was a good sign for him.
Well, it's interesting that you use that term hidden value because also what Spags pointed out and a number of people who have covered Ohio State, there was a point where he just wasn't targeted much, Eli Apple, because what he would do is he'd be assigned to the top wide receiver and essentially shut him down because of his cover skills. So the opportunities to even make interceptions weren't necessarily there all the time. But it was good to see them get a taste of the football field, get a taste of the classroom. And Ben McAdoo did address the media and said, you know, he can't make assumptions on anybody at this point. They're going to have to go back and review the film to determine if there's any undrafted free agents that they want to sign and so forth. Nothing official, by the way, from the Giants' perspective in terms of who they may bring in from that rookie minicamp outside of the draft picks, but you can stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest with respect to that. And for those of you viewing on Twitter, we want to invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino here with you on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines, get the conversation going with you. We certainly appreciate those of you for tuning in and watching. Mike is in Virginia Beach. Mike, you have the first word on the program. What's happening?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing, man?
Doing well, Mike. How's things with you?
I'm very good, man. I was thinking about, I watched a lot of film this offseason. The video is available to us on Paul Perkins, and I watched a lot of Ezekiel Elliott's as well. And one thing that I noticed in comparison with the two, which I didn't see like a large gap of skill set besides the Ezekiel has that unbelievable speed where if you provide any hole at all, he can bust through it. But the one thing I noticed was every running play, Perkins came out of the shotgun, and then they would basically all be draw plays. And he would have to pick a hole where there wasn't really a hole. And I would see him get through that first level very consistently.
Astute observation by you, because what Paul Perkins does extremely well, he uses his quickness to his advantage. He does not hesitate. He knows where he's got to go, and he's through it like lightning. And even if the hole is only a quarter of an inch wide, he's finding a way to hit it so quickly that he gets through before it closes up. They love his quicks. They love his jump cut ability, which, as you guys know, jump cuts in the NFL are extremely special. Guys who can do the jump cut always give defensive front sevens a lot of headaches and trouble. It's if you could do that effectively, consistently, it's a wonderful weapon to have. Now, here's the one thing, though, about Perkins you have to understand. A guy who averaged over 6 yards or about 6 yards a carry at UCLA, his numbers are off the charts. You have to understand, Ezekiel Elliott is an outstanding, outstanding blocker. He's much stronger physically than Paul Perkins
pass
is.
Protection.
Okay? That's a big deal. Okay? That is a very big deal. Now, Perkins shows a willingness to do it. The problem is his frame and his size. He gets overmatched a lot. Now, he's willing to do it, and that's a big, big part of it. But you know what you're saying, and I don't know if you were trying to say this, but it almost sounded like you were comparing them as being kind of almost on the same plane. That one factor in itself raises Ezekiel Elliott much higher than the rest of the backs who are in this draft.
The one thing I will say, Mike, based on your observation, is I think what the two of them have in common, putting, you know, the comparisons of the stats, I think they're both rookie running backs that will have an opportunity to impact their team in year one, especially if Perkins makes the team and has an opportunity to be maybe a third down back or something. I think he still could very well grab opportunities and make his presence felt.
What I would say, common denominators, they both have good speed. They both can catch the ball coming out of the backfield. They both have an understanding of offenses. That's quite clear. You don't play at Ohio State and UCLA without understanding the playbook. So
especially a pro type of.
So they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Those things are all good, and yes, those are similarities. But don't go too far now saying that they're like the, you know, almost twins or in the same class. Then the blocking thing is huge. For Ezekiel Elliott, that is a major, major plus for him. Quite frankly, he's a bigger, bulkier, more sturdier back.
Gotcha. Well, I did watch the UFC game, and if you go back and watch that, you can see him put number 45. The guy's first name was Porter. I can't remember his name, but he's a linebacker. He's a 250-pound linebacker, and Perkins puts him on his tail.
Hey, he's willing to do it. He's eager to do it. But if you look at him through the whole season, what you'll find is, physically, that matchup is not one he's going to win a ton. That's all I'm saying to you. You're right. I'm sure there were instances where he did, and that's great. But here's the thing. Perkins, at least from my perspective, now maybe you didn't see the same thing that I did, but I got the impression that they're looking at him as more of a guy who's going to help them in the passing game quicker than the running game.
Well, I mean, if you look at all of the numbers that he said at UCLA, he was a running back, yet he led the team in receiving. So I think he's got that upside to do that, Paul. I would agree with you. You know, I look at him as a complement to a Shane Vereen maybe in year one, and then as the years go on, he can maybe become more of a early down type of running back.
I'll tell you what. How's this for a little bit of a out-of-the-box kind of thought? Depending upon how the wide receiver situation shakes out, could there be some opportunities where you actually would see Paul Perkins line up wide or in the slot?
I would not rule that out.
He's quick enough.
I would also not rule out, Paul, and we talked about this late last season, and Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Shane Vereen, I think, could get more opportunities in that spot too, Paul. It's possible. Remember, I mean, even Ben McAdoo hinted at, you know, there were times where, you know, we saw Shane Vereen have games where he had 7 or 8 receptions, Paul. And you could have said they could have jumped the ball off to him 10 or 11 times.
And then there were other times he barely touched it.
There you go. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. And I think a lot of that depends on, and I wanted to bring this topic up, a lot depends on what happens competition-wise with the rest of the receiver.
No question.
Because if the running backs show the capacity to catch the football out of the backfield and have the ability to break tackles, get out into the open field, they may say to themselves, we'll keep an extra running back, Paul, because we believe we can line those guys up at wide receiver. I think that's still a possibility when you structure the 53-man roster.
The thing about Perkins is because he has such a dynamic ability to excel in the receiving game, he adds another dimension that, you know, the other running backs really don't have other than Vereen. Vereen's an outstanding receiver. Rashad Jennings is okay. The other guys, they're not dynamic. You know, Williams didn't do it much. Darkwood, he's okay at it. He can do it, but he's not going to make a play with his quicks. Perkins has quicks and he's got hands. You know what that means? He can make big plays in space.
And make people miss and so forth. And you need that. Because that could take you to the next layer of the defense. I do agree with Mike, though. I think he has deceiving power, though, Paul. And what I mean by that, there are parts of his game that we've seen in UCLA where he's run up the gut and he's been able to power his way through some tackles and get in the end zone, even in short yarded situations. So I think that he's flashed in that department. I don't know if you could bank on that, obviously happening.
He's stepping up a level.
Correct. In the NFL all the time, there is a distinct difference between Mike was bringing up going up against the USC defense versus going up against the Cowboys and the Redskins defense and the size of the linebackers. But I do understand what Mike saw on film. I got a taste of that too. The question is, and this is why you got to step back when you look at college film, will it translate to the next level when you have to realize the caliber of the defenders is being kicked up a notch as well?
One thing, though, that I know the Giants believe will translate, his speed and his quicks and that jump cut. Okay? That's innate ability. That's not something that you teach. That's just something this guy's got in his legs.
Got to have the agility to be able to pull that off. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Continuing to take your phone calls here on Big Blue Kickoff Live as we get another week underway on Giants.com. Ed is in Scranton. Ed, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Ed. How's things with you?
What are the Giants going to do a right tackle? You think they're going to put Marshall Newhouse back out there?
Well, it depends on really what happens during the course of these next couple of workouts that are on the schedule. I mean, Newhouse, he's the incumbent. He was there last season, so you certainly don't remove him from the picture. You know, we've talked about Bobby Hart. He's had experience at tackle and guard. However, most people believe he's better suited to be a guard than a tackle, so I don't know how much they'll throw him out at right tackle. But, you know, as of right now, Marshall Newhouse is penciled in to at least start in that position. And it will depend on, will one of the backups emerge as somebody who we didn't anticipate? We're only going to determine that by how they utilize these guys during the course of the next offseason workouts.
And before you get too upset, just remember that the coach himself, Ben McAdoo, said that story has yet to be fully written on the right side of the offensive line. So they clearly have something up their sleeve. Whether or not it manifests itself, you know, before training camp or even during training camp, I can't tell you the answer to that. But it does look like they certainly plan on tinkering with that side of the line.
Well, who's the other options?
Well, right now, Bobby Hart is an option over there because you don't know if John Jerry's going to win the right guard spot or not, or if Newhouse proves that he should be the starting right tackle. Bobby Hart's going to be in that mix for either spot. Again, I'm in the camp that says Bobby Hart should compete more at right guard and has a better chance of beating out Jerry than he does Newhouse. But that, at the moment, is what you're looking at. And there are some other fellows here on the roster as well, and I'm not going to say that they don't have an opportunity because, heck, right now they're here, so that means they have a chance. But I still believe something is going to be happening and bring somebody in from the outside. That's my opinion.
And you have a player like a Byron Stingley, the offensive tackle who they brought in, who's a veteran. He's been with a few teams, including Tennessee. You know, he'll probably get in the mix in terms of grabbing reps and so forth. So there's other players on the roster to at least answer that question. But once again, until we see them utilized in these offseason workouts, it's hard to say that the Giants envision them at the right tackle spot. For all we know, they brought them in to be a left side guy, a guard. Right now, I think there's a lot of the unknown with respect to who they're going to experiment with out at right tackle. The only player that we know for sure who's had experience in the lineup is clearly Marshall Newhouse.
And what about the inside linebackers? You know, they have Brinkley and they have Robinson and they signed this guy, Kelvin Shepard.
Well, those are three right there, and then B.J. Goodson, who they just drafted. That's going to be a fourth guy. There's a number of middle linebackers on this roster, which is good. You're going to have competition.
And Onga.
Yeah, and Onga, too, who also had reps last season. So that's five right there, by my count, who have had middle linebacker experience, whether it be in college or the NFL. You got five guys, let the best man win. That's
going
to be the Giants'
mindset. My guess is two of them stick. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep more than two.
Well,
maybe three on the outside.
Robinson and Brinkley, I think, are the front runners in terms of what they've provided for the Giants and what Robinson did with Washington. Shepard has been utilized in a variety of spots during his career with the Colts, the Bills, and the Dolphins.
Robinson's also played outside.
Correct. Robinson has been because they've come from a 3-4 defense in Washington as opposed to what he's coming here. As far as Goodson, we know he's been an outside and a middle linebacker too at Clemson. And then Onga has primarily been a middle guy since he joined the Giants last season.
And Goodson has a chance to win the job?
Say that again, I didn't hear you.
Does Goodson have a chance to win the job?
I mean, Goodson's going to be in the mix. I mean, I wouldn't put him as the front runner. I think he's going to get his opportunities, but Brinkley's got a lot more experience. You can't overlook that. So does Keenan Robinson. And usually the experienced players have better taste of the defense and different looks that the offenses are going to provide. So, I mean, I would say Goodson is probably third or fourth on the depth chart right now if you were at least to rank it going in.
All right, thank you, guys.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. And Goodson also, speaking of rookie minicamp, and this is important to note and should not be overlooked, and, you know, we talked about this with Jarrell Adams last week, Paul. First thing that Goodson was asked about when he met with the media, I want to play special teams. You like when you hear from a guy, no, you do especially, but we don't have to go over that, but when you hear a rookie come in and
no,
he's
because
like,
that takes a spot away from me.
Perhaps, yes. Well, special teams would be a good way to describe you, but Goodson and Adams are two of the six rookies. They did not even have to delve into the subject immediately. You heard them show their ability, their desire to want to play special teams.
And I've got a hunch that Thompson's going to be the same way. No one actually questioned him about special teams, but I don't think there's any question that he's going to be involved in specials as well. You know, the one thing that I just want to add about everything we've talked about to this point about these rookies is that they must know, let's face it, They've read the papers. They've kept track of what's going on in the NFL. They knew when they were drafted to the Giants that the Giants are in a bit of a lull. This team has had a downswing for the last few years. And these rookies must know if this franchise is taking their time and their effort to scout me and pick me and give me a chance as a draft choice to come to camp, I will legitimately have an opportunity to flash. You have to know that. Sometimes, you know, I'll be honest with you. When the Giants were in their heyday and when, you know, Parcells was getting his two Super Bowl rings, and even when Tom Coughlin was getting his couple of rings, there were rookie classes who came in, and there'd be a third or fourth round pick who'd be saying to himself, because I know they would tell me, boy, it's going to be hard for me to get any chances here. You know, I just hope I can work hard and make the roster because there's not a lot of roster spots available because the team is so good. That's first. Second of all, God only knows if I'm even going to get a couple of snaps because this team is just loaded. Look at all the guys in front of me.
Yeah.
Well, I think this class knows. I think it's clear by the way they have conducted themselves and the way they've prepared themselves. They know that if they put their best foot forward from the get-go, they're going to get a chance to earn not only a roster spot, they may get a chance to earn snaps.
Well, and when you're coming to a team, as you just noted,
they've
Paul,
struggled.
That is not coming off a great season, any rookie should say to themselves, I've got a very realistic chance to make this roster because clearly the Giants are looking to upgrade at every position. They're not content with where they left off last season. So if you're the sixth-round pick, if you're the second-round pick, you should feel, hey, special teams is an area I'm willing to contribute, but that doesn't mean I'm just settling for not being able to contribute in my respective position.
And I don't get the impression at all, that these rookies are just happy to be here. I think they all are itching to show their wares and to gain as much of a foothold on this roster as they possibly can.
Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Armando in Florida. Armando, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance? What's up, Paul?
Hi.
Doing well, Armando. How's things with you?
Great. I just want to make, is it okay if I can make two predictions on the undrafted free agents?
Please, go right ahead.
Absolutely.
Okay, the first prediction I want to make is Marshawn Copridge, running back.
I know of him.
And Paul loves a running back that can block. I know you love a running back that can block. And if you watch this guy's tape, this guy is a blocker. And he's a great runner.
Yeah.
And then another D tackle is Greg Milhouse Jr.
From Campbell?
Greg Milhouse.
Yeah, he's from Campbell.
Yeah.
Correct.
This guy here, he could be a rotational guy on third down to sack the quarterback with snacks in the middle on first and second down. We definitely need a rotational DT. So those are my two predictions. That's all I really wanted to say. I'll take your information off the air. All right.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Armando. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I believe that Milhouse has one thing going for him from the very get-go. The Giants need some more depth along the defensive line, specifically a tackle. So I understand your enthusiasm there because he had a draftable grade on him, and the Giants were able to pick him up after the draft was over. So that's kind of a neat thing. Certainly level of comp is going to be a big deal as he tries to you know, make the jump to the NFL. He's one of those guys who's going to have to show something earlier rather than later if he's going to be allowed to stick around. Now, the thing about Copridge, look, again, FCS player, okay, which is the old 1AA in college, for those of you who don't know, played at Illinois State, put up terrific numbers. Again, he's a smallish type guy in terms of stature. He's got some thickness to him. Tremendous production in school, ran in the 4.4s. You're right, very physical, and a terrific player. But now here's the thing. The Giants are loaded at running back already. We've heard how excited everybody is, including us, about Paul Perkins from UCLA. And now you're going to tell me, well, this FCS running back from Illinois State is also going to make it? How many do you want to keep? It's going to be very, very difficult. Now, having said that, I do think, much like Akeem Hunt last year.
And there was a lot of excitement surrounding him, too.
Who showed a lot of things. There wasn't enough room for him. He got cut. I think he went to the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken, after the Giants had him. I don't know if he's still on a roster right now. I agree with you. He's a guy you want to keep an eye on because there's always the potential for practice squad, even if the 53 is too crowded. But I would say right now for him to be able to make the 53 is quite a long shot because, again, besides beating out the veteran running backs who are on this team, he's going to have to fight Paul Perkins. I think a lot of people have a lot of really good things to say about Paul Perkins. He's not coming in here to give up his opportunity to an undrafted rookie free agent.
Well, and it's not just Perkins. It's also some veterans like a Bobby Rainey and Orleans Darko, who's been on the team too. He'd have to jump them as well because, let's face it, they're probably looking at four running backs at max. I'd be very surprised if they keep five running backs, Paul, because if you look at the history of the Giants roster makeup, at least the initial 53-man roster, it's really been three or four over the last few years.
I think we always have to keep in mind, though, that during training camp and during the preseason, injuries occur,
and
that's why it's never a bad thing, even if you have seven guys to pick and there's only four spots. Well, guess what? Sometimes injuries determine that final roster rotation for you.
Akeem Hunt, Texans, by the way. Just looked
Texans
up.
Now.
Houston Texans.
Did he have a stop with the Ravens?
Let's take a look. I didn't look at his breakdown, but we will look at his profile to see he was with the Ravens. Yes, he was with them on the practice squad.
Okay.
According to
I was pretty sure he landed on the practice squad
last October. He was released, though, 7 days later. So it was a very, very short stint with Baltimore. And right now, he was on the Texans active roster because obviously the rosters have expanded. He started off on the Texans practice squad and then was bolstered and moved up.
And again, not to do an about-face, when Akeem Hunt was here and we had a lot of calls excited about him, I thought that his best chance to make the team was as a kickoff returner. You know, you hear me say that a lot about these running backs. I didn't necessarily think that he would have been a, quote, running back, but I thought he certainly had potential as an NFL kickoff returner.
One other note I wanted to throw out with respect to Milhouse, who Armando also threw out, and you talked a lot about him, transfer from Appalachian State. So he started Appalachian State, then he went to Campbell.
Which was an FCS school and then moved up.
And they've had some notable victories over the last few years.
Oh,
Appalachian
sure.
Appalachian State. They're no longer a team that you overlook on the schedule. And he showed the ability to get to the quarterback in his last year here at Milhouse because he had five sacks in 11 games. So it's interesting, can he transfer that over to the NFL level? Because, you know, you like to have a defensive tackle, Paul, that could also get to the quarterback. That's an added bonus.
No question. And again, with the Giants, you're looking at Hankins, you're looking at Big Snacks, and then after that, you've got a few veterans who are in the show-me category. You know, what are you going to get out of Nix? What are you going to get out of Hughes? What are you going to get out of Bromley? These guys are all going to be fighting for spots, and the Giants are likely to keep four defensive tackles. Maybe if they like a lot of the defensive ends on this team, they keep only three because a couple of them can play inside. But there's room behind the starting two defensive tackles for people to scrap for jobs.
There's definitely opportunity. There's no doubt about that. That's why these offseason workouts and camps are going to be very interesting to see who perhaps at least emerges in the early going. All right, let's continue to take in some of your phone calls here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Greg in New Jersey. Greg, what's happening?
Nah, it's Brandon. What's going
Brandon,
on, man?
Okay. Sorry about that. Brandon,
how are
you? Hey, what's going on? I want to touch on two things that I'm a little bit concerned about this season. I'm concerned about our offensive line. I'm going to start there first, on the right side. Now, I've been screaming Bobby Hart at the right guard position since I've been coming up here on the show. I think y'all probably already knew that, and I wanted Conklin in the first round, but the board didn't go our way.
You've been hanging out with me too much. That's your problem.
Yeah, but it's all good. But I believe the right side is a very, very big concern, because I believe Bobby Hart needs to be the right guard, but we're still missing the right tackle. Now, whoever's going to step up and take the position, I don't know. I do not like Newhouse out there at right tackle position, and I do not like John Jerry at the right guard position. And I'm already hearing Richburg is already saying that the offensive line, he's working harder than anybody. I don't know if he's just trying to spark something to get the guys going, or is he really seeing that? And my guess, he can only be talking about that right side. So I don't want no guys in there that's just happy to be there. We need guys that's willing to work and get this championship season going like everybody else wants. My second concern is I believe we need to play Eli Apple on the outside and bring Janoris Jenkins into the inside, because I don't think we'd probably be making a mistake throwing a rookie right into the slot position, because 99% or probably 80% of the passes in the league are in the middle of the field. And that's something he's never really done before. So if anything, we need to ease him in that situation, or just let him play the outside and let Janoris Jenkins play the inside, because Janoris is a little bit smaller than he is, and I think he can adjust a little bit better than Eli. What you guys think?
Caller, before you say anything else, this is Brandon. This is Gregor. This is Brandon. Brandon, before you say anything else, I just appreciate the fact that you've been listening to me on this program for a long time, because you and I are in such agreement, okay? And I get too many calls who want to say something conflicting. I think just because they want to get my oregano flying, just like you and Schmelk all the time. You guys love to get me going.
Oh, do we ever.
So thank you for at least understanding the game, because clearly what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate that. Now, please, speak to the man.
Well, the one thing I was going to say first about your point, Brandon, with respect to having Apple start on the outside and Jenkins on the inside, keep in mind, Jenkins was an outside corner with the Rams, so it's not like he has a great deal of experience on the inside as well. You can make the point that he understands the defense a little bit more and has more NFL experience, but you're also really throwing in a veteran into uncharted territory if you switch Jenkins and Apple. That's why I think offseason workouts, training camp, the preseason games is the time for you to experiment with both of them, so week one against the Cowboys, both of them may have had the taste to playing in the slot
and,
by then.
And really, you're both right, because what you do is you see how it plays out and which guys fit the better holes. But I do suspect, again, I suspect that it's going to turn out with Apple on the outside, at least for the early part of the season. I would suspect that. But, hey, you know what? If it looks like it's better the other way in training camp, Spags is going to go the other way. I mean, it's just that simple.
And another thing I wanted to say, I believe we need to start the free safety that we drafted from Boise State
Darian Thompson.
In the middle of the field and team him up with Collins and let them gel throughout the summer as well.
That's where you lost me. That's where you lost me, though, because it needs to be a competition, and the best man has to win. Don't just start the draft pick.
Because you don't want to just bring them in there. And you never know how the guys feel about that, just throwing them in there. So you've got to have it fair for a fair competition. But what about the offensive line that I was saying?
Well, again, I think that has to be a competition too. And I believe that Bobby Hart should be in competition with John Jerry, because I think it's his best position. And I think he certainly has an opportunity to win that job away from John Jerry. That's not to say John Jerry doesn't belong here, because I do think he's a worthy NFL lineman, and that's great. But I think that Bobby Hart, at this stage of his career, probably has more upside. And I think he's better suited because of his feet, his technique, and his athleticism isn't suited to tackle. It's better suited to guard.
So who would challenge Newhouse at the right tackle position?
I think it's somebody who's probably not here yet. That would be my best guess.
Oh, okay. Okay, that would be all. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. The other thing to note with respect to his comments about the safeties, all of last training camp, they took all of those safeties, and every other day, Paul, if you remember, it was a complete different set of safeties. Dave Merritt would be rotating the guys
like crazy.
Remember,
Miles was here, Gordy was here, everybody was
flopping
around.
I remember people
calling
in
chairs.
Yeah, and asking who's going to be the two starting safeties. I'm like, well, ask me which day of the week it is, because every other day it was a new combination. So nobody is being penciled in as the starter next to Landon Collins, because I have a feeling Collins in the first week of training camp could be lining up next to a completely different safety every single day, assuming they follow the game plan from last season. With respect to your point about Bobby Hart, and I've heard where you stand, I've heard a lot of people believe he's more suited for a guard. But I'll tell you this, you don't have anything to lose, Paul, to give him some reps at right tackle in the early going.
Absolutely.
Because you want to get the best five guys out on the offensive line. So let's say they like Jerry at right guard. Let's go with that premise. They want Jerry to be the starting right guard. They feel content with him. Then the tackle comes down to who's the fifth best offensive lineman on this team that you think could hold their ground at right tackle. If you think Bobby Hart can hold his ground, I don't see any harm in at least throwing him out there and seeing what he's made of.
Well, the bottom line is that you need to go in with at least a plan A, and you want to give Bobby Hart the best chance to compete at a spot where you believe that he can win, because maybe that spot isn't quite what you want it to be. And I think the Giants have made it clear that the right side of the line isn't quite where they want it to be. Whatever position he wins, again, the opinion that I have and many people have is that he's going to win at a guard if he's going to win one. That's fine. If it turns out to be the other way, that's okay too. You want the best five. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'm not going to be like, you know, taking a permanent Sharpie and saying he's got to be the right guard. No, not at all. But you're asking me where I think it's going to land and where I think the best case scenario lies. That's what I think.
And that's fair. The only thing I go back to is, remember, he's not far removed from college, and you also need to anticipate the speed of defensive ends in the NFL versus college. But let's not forget, he did play tackle at Florida State. Mm-hmm. So he does have recent experience, at least
he's
at that position.
He's played some snaps at tackle for the Giants.
Yeah. So it's not out of the crazy stretching imagination.
And by
here.
All means, he needs to take some snaps out there, if for no other reason, for versatility purposes. Because, A, he might wind up having to play out there anyway.
If an injury happens or something like that.
Or B, even if he just turns out that he doesn't win a starting job, well, guess what? As a backup, he might be the first backup off the bench at any position except center.
Could be that swing offensive lineman, which we've seen in the past. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Back to the lines. Greg now is in Jersey. Greg, what's happening?
Hi, this is actually Brandon as well.
Brandon, all right, so we got two Brandons. How about that? Yep, sorry, Brandon. All right, so what do you got for us?
I'm on the same subject. You know, I'm real high on Bobby Hart as soon as we drafted him. I was that excited for Bradshaw as well in the seventh round. So I feel that he can act. I think the Giants should really experiment with him and see if he could actually get that right tackle spot. I know people don't think it, but I actually feel that he's capable of it. If he, you know, just drop 10 pounds. Because I think his feet can move, you know, fast enough. He'll get beat sometimes, but so will Flowers by someone speedy on the other side as well.
Okay, let me just add one thing to what you just said and why your logic is flawed. Because if you ask him to drop the weight, okay, now you're really going to make the run blocking component even worse than it is now. And that's not the direction the Giants want to go into when you're talking about the right tackle spot. If anything, what they need to do is enhance their run blocking on that side of the line, because the pass protection basically has been okay. Eli Manning's had two sensational years. The problem is the right side of that line has not been productive in the running game. And if you want to lighten up Bobby Hart's weight and put him at right tackle, what are you doing?
I think he's like 325? I think he's 325.
And you want to bring him down? I could not disagree with you more. That'd be a very, very bad move. Your running component is going to be destroyed.
Okay, that's fine. We'll just see if he can be that right tackle and actually be that starter, because I think he's actually better than – I like Newenhouse and, you know, the right guard, but I like them as backups. I really think that he could be And because it's so much more difficult to fill that right tackle position, as for that guard, I think it's a lot easier to fill in that guard spot.
Let me throw one thing at you, and I've never said this before on the show, but I've had a personnel guy outside this building say to me, one of the possible combinations that might happen for the Giants if nobody else comes in, it's even possible that Newhouse moves into right guard and wins the job there, and Bobby Hart wins the right job at right tackle. And instead of John Jerry being a starter, what if you had Hart at right tackle and Newhouse at right guard? It would be a different combination that to this point has not been tried, but if the Giants are unsatisfied with the combos that they try in camp, that would be one of the combinations that they could use. Just saying. I'm not advocating it.
Hart,
well,
by the way,
that's exactly what I'd like.
Well, Brandon,
exactly
Hart,
what I'd like.
Hart, by the way, is listed at 334 according to the official Giants roster. That's his weight.
That was after lunch.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. No, yeah. So that's even more than that. And then the second thing, I love this draft class. I believe that it's equal, if not better. Since 07, I think 07 was our best draft class, and I think this class is going to really contribute this year. I think the first three are going to be end up winning their spots as starters, and the next three are going to start contributing around week 7 to 10, just like or even a little bit later, depending on the position. But I think all six are going to contribute this year and get a push for the playoffs, and we know what can happen then.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I think the first three easily could start day one, and appreciate the phone call, Brandon. Thanks so much for weighing in. I don't think that's certainly a stretch. As far as then the bottom three, I could certainly see contributions at least on special teams if you're going to go to that degree. And it really depends on what role Perkins can carve out. You know, can Perkins emerge as one of the three running backs that gets some down work, or is he going to be a special teamer? That's really the wild card right now. But the top three in this year's draft, I think they could come in day one and be starters. I don't think that's a stretch.
And quite frankly, you know, a lot of times your sixth and seventh picks are true wild cards that you don't necessarily know if they're going to make it, but you're kind of crossing your fingers. Well, with Adams, all we've heard about is that he has tremendous upside, and we now know from talking to his positional coach in college, he is a really good special teams kickoff coverage guy. I'm going to tell you, as I sit here, I'm disappointed if all six don't make it.
Well, making it, but I'm talking about starters, though. I
guess, that's another story.
The last caller was talking about, in terms of a big percentage, could be starters, and thinking maybe by midseason they're all start contributing.
I'd be disappointed if all six didn't make the team, and I'd probably be somewhat disappointed if at least they didn't get some type of ability or an opportunity to produce. Because even if Adams winds up making a team and just plays specials and winds up making 12 special teams tackles this season, you know what? That's a contribution.
Yeah. Same thing with Goodson, plays special teams and makes X amount of tackles. That's contributing too.
That people, again, folks, remember, it's one-third of the game. Special teams is a big deal. And if you've got guys who get down there, look how valuable Zach Diassi's been over the years. You know?
Well, and what about what Dwayne Harris did for the return game last year, too?
So don't ignore that. If that's all the guy does, he comes in and he makes a bunch of tackles on special teams. That helps field position, which helps you win games. That's a contribution.
And that area shouldn't be overlooked. I agree with you 100%, Paul, because I remember, you know, 2-3 years ago, we're constantly talking about special teams on this program as opposed to offense and defense. You know, what are they going to do to get maybe a prolific return guy in? People were talking about the last time that happened was Dominic Hixon, and then Dwayne Harris comes, and all of a sudden you're going back to the archives, and he's achieving things that haven't been dusted off for 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you the type of impact that he had. But the guys who tackle, the guys who cover are just as important, as Paul mentioned, because of the special teams and the positioning for starting offense and so forth. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Chris in Manchester. Chris, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? Good afternoon.
Hi. Doing well, Chris. How's things with you?
Hey, can't complain. I just got one thing to get off my chest, and I want to go over a couple of things. I'm the one who called in, and a couple of callers called in about Rankins. I was a Rankins guy. I'm the guy that wanted Rankins. I think our defensive line could have used some help. But I'm happy with Apple. And that's all I'm going to say on the matter. Even though I had Jackson higher, but I could live with Apple. Okay?
Okay. I'm glad. And by the way, I understand your want for defensive line help because, as you know, I believe you build from the trenches. And
absolutely,
I'm all for the Giants trying to improve their offensive and defensive lines. You're aware of that. And quite honestly, I think they may get some help here in this rookie minicamp with some of these guys that they brought in. Milhouse was a guy you mentioned.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to bring up, yeah.
There may be some diamonds in the rough here who are going to challenge for jobs on that defensive line. So don't just think that they haven't touched it because they've addressed it in some small way.
And, Chris, before you take us through your thoughts on some of the undraftees, I just want to point out, 00 to me is a part of this year's draft class.
Absolutely.
So the Giants essentially drafted a defensive lineman. He's just not officially going down as part of the 2016 class.
I was really at the point of time. I know they were going to – well, Jerry Jones wanted Elliott, and there was a couple of other players thrown in there. And it just made sense to me. After they drafted him, it just made even clearer sense to me, Paulie. That's all it did. But can I move on now to my undrafted free agents here? All right. I got a couple of guys. I believe the Giants have minimal depth at some positions, and I think we all agree with that.
Yeah.
And I really think this class is a little bit better than most. Like last year, we all thought – Lacoste, he made the team. We all thought Curry was going to make the team. He made it. Hunt, I thought, probably had a shot. But this year's class has a real nice, you know, this kid Mike Ross could compete with Wynn, all right? Just hear me out. The kid Dayon could compete with Wade. Melvin Lewis could compete in this class, the defensive tackle.
Yeah, 343 pounds worth. Yeah. He is the biggest guy in camp.
Yeah, the guy Roger Lewis could compete at the wide receiver. May can compete at wide receiver. Darius Poe is a monster.
From Cal.
These guys are all projected for late rounds.
Yeah.
Okay? These guys. And I do like Craig Milhouse. And the guy at Notre Dame, the Aguawa. You know, they're a little bit raw in some areas. He's a weak side defensive end. But you know what? I really believe there's going to be some real nice competition this year. And I think more than two guys are going to make the team from this undrafted free agent. Your thoughts, guys?
I would say this to you. I have not gone back specifically to look at all my notes from the last several years, but it seems to me that the Giants this year in their undrafted rookie free agent signees, and again, we have, 14 of them that we were given
we
the other day?
Number. Yeah.
It seems to me that there are more draftable players in that undrafted grouping than I remember in recent years. Usually there's one or two guys that really stick out and you say, okay, that guy should have been drafted or he was a possible sixth rounder. He might have been a seven. You're right. There's probably about eight or nine guys on that list who had draftable grades who could have been fifth, sixth, or seventh round draft choices. So I agree with you. I think the scouts and the Giants personnel department did a very, very good job in bringing in this undrafted rookie free agent class. And that's why I'm telling people, don't be shocked if like three of these guys, which is a lot for many teams,
that is a lot,
make the team.
Yeah.
Don't be shocked.
Yeah. One last point, okay?
What do you got, Chris?
All right. Paulie, I know you love Williams, the running back. I know you love him. Okay? He was your boy. He's got to stop running into butts or running into the offensive lineman when he runs. There's going to be a little bit more competition there this year.
There is.
Kolfrich may compete. You know, Williams could, you know, and Jenkins is always hurt. There could be a shakeup here in the running back.
Yeah.
And what do you think, Paul?
I'll give you a little story. Okay, first of all, yes, we know Darkwa right now is nursing a leg injury. We don't have any details in terms of how bad it is or how long he's going to be sidelined. But right now he's a little bit nicked up. Andre Williams, to me, is a workhorse between the tackles guy who needs appropriate blocking to make things happen. I think what happened is when he was a rookie, at first, the game was a little quick for him. He wasn't recognizing the holes as quickly as he needed to because the speed of the game is a lot different in the NFL than it is in college. And I also thought that the holes were closing quicker than he thought they would because, again, the speed of the game is different. So you had a recognition problem, and then you had him not getting into the holes quick enough. Well, he finally started to figure that out at the end of his rookie season, and he was very productive. Then last year, the Giants had a tremendous amount of problems blocking for the run. And what happened was, even coming off of his rookie season, I believe that Andre Williams lost some confidence in not only the line, but himself. And when a running back loses confidence, he becomes tentative. He doesn't hit the hole quick enough. He doesn't read the hole quick enough. He hesitates when he gets there. He stutter steps. He runs into the backs of guys. How many times did you see Andre Williams get contacted behind the line of scrimmage last year?
Yeah.
That destroys a running back's confidence and basically just rips his heart right out.
Right,
I think
so
Andre Williams.
Hopefully, this new class coming in. It looks, sounds to me like the whole entire locker room is very confident.
Well,
it looks like they're gelling together, and hopefully we get some confidence up, and hopefully he can play some good ball for us.
Let me just say this to you. I'm not giving up on Andre Williams yet because it's only his third season. This is a show-me year now. He's got to show that he can bounce back and that he can improve himself from what he has put on tape. I will add this to you. I've had conversation with him. He mentally thinks he's got it down. He also went to martial arts class, much like Amani Toomer did. And Andre Williams studied under a guy who worked with Bruce Lee because he wanted to take this seriously. He dropped about 10 pounds, which he thinks is going to help him to be quicker. He also helped his strength, believe it or not, through martial arts classes. So he thinks he's gotten quicker, and he thinks he's maintained his strength. So he believes that physically he's in the best shape of his life. And he thinks mentally he understands where he's come from. I'm thinking Andre Williams has a real chance to turn it around this year, but he's going to need some help from that offensive line.
And he's going to have to hold off the competition, too. I mean,
no question.
Can't be overlooked.
And if he doesn't, I'll be the first one to tell you that he has not won the job. He doesn't deserve it, and the other guys have passed him up. I'll be the first one to tell you that.
And, Chris, appreciate the phone call.
That was my point. You know, there's a lot of competition. Denell, in my opinion, may have a little bit of a leery thing. I think Adams is going to get more playing time than people think. But with that, I don't want to take all the time.
All right, Chris.
Well, thank you, guys.
You got it. Appreciate
the
phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Also, Devon Kennard has also been on record saying he believes he's in the best shape since he was drafted by the Giants, too. So those are certainly two players to watch, him and Andre Williams. Chris is in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
You fellas, man. Big Lance, Paulie D.
How are you, Chris?
Real quick, man, this is not the initial point I wanted to make, but back to Andre Williams, if I may.
Sure.
I like Andre Williams. I liked him when he came out. I like what he brings to the table. I'm just not sure that he's the right back for this offense. I think he's a very good back. I think he's a thumper. I think he's a guy that gets better with carries.
That's true, too. I agree with that 100%. I do think he's a rhythm back, and the Giants certainly didn't really use a rhythm back last year until the end of the season when Jennings took over.
But here's the other thing to note, and Chris, I do think you bring up a good point, but, you know, Jennings did gain some rhythm late last season. They did start to feed the ball to one guy. But remember, you know, Andre Williams was not a receiver in college. He barely had any reception, so coming in, he had to learn that aspect of being a running back in order for him to earn more playing time. So, you know, compared to like a guy like Paul Perkins, Perkins is coming in, you know he can catch the ball, he can run with the football. Williams came in, it was a completely different skill set. So I'm not saying that he was at a disadvantage, but, you know, that limited his opportunities as a rookie in the NFL.
I will also add one other thing, and then I want to let you continue, caller. In terms of the Giants running backs, guys who are best suited to make something out of not much are going to be Perkins. Perkins will do that. He will make something out of not much because of his quicks, his speed, and his jump cut. He can make something out of not much. Rashad Jennings can make something out of not much because of his veteran ability to see things, and he's pretty good at angling into the hole, and he's got some size where he can force himself through a one-inch hole and gain 3 or 4 yards.
Probably the biggest – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, those two guys can make something out of not much.
Right.
Andre Williams is not that guy.
No.
Andre Williams – he needs you to give him something, and then he's going to pound you, and he's going to do a lot. But he needs a little more help from the line than the other guys do. And quite frankly, that's why I don't think it's fair to grade him until it all plays out and until he has a chance to play behind a very stout offensive line. Maybe it's not with the Giants. Maybe at some point Andre Williams will be better off on another team that will give him the bigger holes that he needs to be at his best. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, he looks like a Pittsburgh kind of back to me, you know, just with a more accomplished offensive line. Now, I'm not on the ledge with the offensive line. I don't think we're as bad as a lot of fans do. Can we get better? Of course, especially on the right side, and right tackle is still a question. But I believe the coaching staff will get that figured out, knowing that Eli's in the latter half of his career. You know, in the twilight, really, at this point. And they can't play around with that. They know they got to keep him protected on all sides. So, with that said, let me jump into my last point. I know it's getting late for you guys. The back end, man, I think we're pretty good up front right now, on paper at least. I think the linebackers, they look good. We don't know for sure really yet. But I'm more concerned about the back end, in that Spags' system seems to be more predicated on between the ears more than physical ability, if I can get away with that, because I'm thinking about James Butler and like Jabril Wilson. Those guys weren't like superstars back there, you know, but they knew where to be. They knew how to line guys up. Do you guys see, and I lean on y'all, from the guys that we do have, guys that got it between the ears where they can maintain the back end of this defense? And I'll take that off the air, fellas. Y'all have a good day.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Chris. Right. Well, I mean, this rookie class jumps right off the bat to me in that category about having the smarts and the ability to read defenses because they have more experience in college. B.J. Goodson was the starting middle linebacker for one of the best defenses in college last year in Clemson. Darian Thompson, in terms of him being that center fielder and what he did at Boise State to establish the defense, I think he fits that criteria. Jasper Brinkley, who was on the team last year, I think has the smarts and the ability to be able to set the defense. So, you know, those are three players right there that are going to be at positions that Chris was noting. Safety and linebacker, which we know, and you talked about this, and Spags even mentioned this when he first came back last year. He said, safety is by far the most important position in my defense. You need to have a guy back there that is going to be able to see everything and say, hey, buddy, move over to the right a little bit more because the running back's going to beat you to the edge. Defensive lineman, scoot over to the left. That's what they need. I think there are a number of players on this roster because of their experience and their smarts that could certainly meet those needs.
I'll say one thing. Spags is one hell of a teacher. And if those guys have it upstairs and they're willing to learn, they got one of the best guys in the league who's going to bring them along.
We got two more callers, and we're hitting that 1 p.m. Eastern time, but we do want to fit in both of you. Brian is in D.C. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
Hi, Brian. Doing, Brian?
First, I want to say I greatly enjoyed the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in.
Got two quick points. The first I want to say, and, you know, I'd like to get your opinions on this, but I feel like Reese has done a masterful job of just sticking to the plan. I feel just from reading articles and things, I think folks, and it's understandable, Coughlin was loved. But I think when you look at the last few games of the season, you know, he made a couple of mistakes that most coaches would have lost their jobs as a result. But in response to that, obviously Reese is going to get a lot of flack because of players and things like that. And so that leads me into my second point, which is about the offensive line and why I think he's really done a great job when you look at the draft. Because everyone keeps harping on this offensive line, but when you look at the stats, it's actually a pretty good line. And I'm not going, you know, I'm not a stat guy. I'm not going to say I look at film. That's not what I do for a living. That's what I don't think most of the people that call in do for a living. But when I take other folks' opinions, like Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders, they've got the line consistently ranked as like the 10th, 11th line in the league. In running, Pro Football Focus has us ranked at number 12, and for passing, number 12. And then Football Outsiders has us ranked at 6 for passing and then 11 for a run. So we obviously we want to always improve the line just like at any position. But we harp on this offensive line like it's bad and actually did a pretty good job last year.
Well, this
so
is...
I'll take the responses off the
well,
line.
Appreciate the phone call, Brian. And I think he brought up a very interesting point. And, you know, I could go through the numbers here. In terms of pass protection, it tends to be exaggerated. The Giants' offensive line and pass protection has not been as bad as some people make it out to be, especially when you consider Manning getting rid of the football quickly with Ben McAdoo's offense, and the sack numbers allowed have gone down, and they've dipped each of the last 3 years.
The offensive line and pass protection has been good enough to put this team in position to win games. That's not the problem.
It's the run blocking. That's the aspect where they're still trying to improve. And those numbers do not show consistent improvement over the last few years. So, you know, when you focus on the offensive line and you're talking about the right side or gaining better chemistry on the left side and so forth, it's coming down to the run block.
Here's what I want you to do. I think all these analytics people with all these stats and all these services and all these websites and all these companies, those numbers are really, really nice. And that's enjoy your numbers, okay? Here's all you need to know about the Giants' run-blocking offensive line. Look at their running game numbers in terms of rushing yards per game and rushing yards per carry. It's like a seismograph, okay? That's not what you want, okay? You don't. If you want to have a little dip every once in a while, fine, but you want it to be pretty high up here on the bar, fairly consistent. You don't want jagged peaks and valleys like an ice, a glacier in Alaska. Or like a seismograph. That is the last thing you want. That right there is an indication of a poor blocking, run-blocking offensive line. That's first. Second, how many times were the Giants able to lock down a game in the fourth quarter with their four-minute offense, which is supposed to rely on the running game? Didn't happen. That's because they did not have the run-blocking to execute an appropriate four-minute offense. Those are the things you need to know. The numbers, they're from math class. All right? This is pro football.
Well, with that being said, though, allow me to just throw out a few numbers just to further at least back up the claims that we're making.
You're welcome to do that.
I like the numbers a little bit. You may not. I like the numbers. Real quickly, 2013, the Giants gave up 40 sacks. 2013, they gave up 40 sacks. 2014, 30. And then last season, 27. So there has been a drop-off in terms of protecting Eli Manning's sacks allowed. In terms of the rushing game, as you were mentioning, these peaks and valleys, 2013, the Giants' rushing attack was 29th in the NFL, and then they were tied for 29th in yardage per carry. 2014, 23rd in the NFL in rushing yards per game, tied for 28th in yardage per carry. And then this past season, finished up 19th in rushing yards per game, tied for 16th in yards per carry. So, you know, some areas have gone up, some areas have gone down, and so forth.
Lance, it's not about where you ranked at the end of the season with your rushing totals. It's about on a week-to-week basis.
Throughout the season.
How consistent were you, and where was the low mark? That's more important than your overall final rushing number.
And I 100% agree with you. And I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but I could tell you from monitoring it throughout the season, it would start low, it would go up, it would go back down.
You can't have 125 yards one game and then 40 yards rushing the next game.
Of course.
That's not acceptable.
Absolutely. But I think how you finish also says a lot about the average, at least, for what you had to deal with. Let's finish up the show with Don in Florida. Don, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How are you?
Hi. Doing well, Don. How's things with you?
Good. You know, Paul, you keep talking about the fact you want to wait until the end of the month till the cuts start really occurring to see what the Giants wind up with. But I've looked at the undrafted offensive linemen that the Giants have brought into camp.
Yep.
And I see possibly two or three that have potential to make the team.
Okay.
And I just want to get your thoughts on a real quick question.
Well, at this point, if you'll just bear with me a second now, I'm looking at the official undrafted rookie free agent signing list because everybody else is here on a tryout and to this point haven't been signed, so the Giants don't own them. There's not one offensive line on the signed list. So at this point, anybody that you want to throw to me is not under consideration, at least for me, until I know that the Giants have them under their care.
No undraftees are officially on the 90-man.
I guess I misread the list because I thought that that those that were brought in, the Giants were not only given a tryout to, but had signed them.
We have the list of official signees right here, and there are no offensive linemen on that list. Now, that could change this afternoon, because they are constantly in the flow during the course of this week of deciding which one of those guys they want to sign, which ones they don't. Maybe there's some guys they want to sub in and out. Someone got here late. Maybe they couldn't get here over the weekend, and they really want them. But to this point, no offensive linemen were signed. But go ahead, if you want to throw out a couple of names, you're welcome to.
No, I can't speak to it. That's fine at this point because, as you said, I'll wait till tomorrow to take a look at the list and see where, rather than try and give you a couple of names that, at this point, don't have merit.
Okay.
All right, done. Well, appreciate the phone call.
Call back tomorrow, please.
They signed 14 players who are undrafted free agents officially who are on the Giants roster. They may make more moves in the coming days or weeks, depending if they want to shuffle players in and out. But the list that Don may have been referring to, he may have looked at everybody who was invited to rookie minicamp. There were over 70 guys, and there were a lot of offensive linemen on that
list. I think it was 73 guys,
yeah,
was it?
Just over 70. There were a lot of offensive linemen on that list, Don, so it's not as if you looked at imaginary names. The problem is, just because you're at rookie minicamp doesn't mean you're now part of the 90-man roster.
Hey,
there's a distinct difference.
We're on the property. We're not part of the roster.
Correct. Well, that may be a good thing for the sake of not having him on the roster.
Hey, by the way, got to tell folks, if you didn't see it, MetLife Stadium, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, August 23rd, August 25th, be there, the Boss and Company. Rocking it, baby.
Well, we know you're going to be there. We can tell you that.
Badlands.
Yes, first thing he mentions to me when he walks into the facility. So you can only imagine what I had to deal with and what I'm going to have to deal with now that the program is over. With that being said, we certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.